What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Up Before You podcast with me, Connor Warman. This episode of the Up Before You podcast is brought to you by Ticket Weirdo. With concert and game season just around the corner, the timing is perfect for those of you listening who want to plan your summer events. We've teamed up with Ticket Weirdo to make buying tickets this season super affordable. What's great about Ticket Weirdo is they are the only ticket site that doesn't charge you hidden service fees and also donates a portion of your purchase to charity. Check them out by simply going to TicketWeirdo.com and typing in code UBY at checkout to save an extra 10% off unlimited ticket purchases throughout the year. Once again, that's UBY at checkout to save an extra 10% off your ticket purchases and to keep it weird this summer. Now guys, if you have a moment, please go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the show and leave a 5-star rating and a review. It only takes a second and is a great way to support the show, and the feedback means a lot to me. If you like this episode of the podcast, please share with family and friends and share via social media and make sure to tag Up Before You. And lastly, go follow us on Instagram and Facebook and visit upbeforeyou.com to keep up to date with all the latest episodes, news, and updates surrounding the show. Okay, my guest today is Kat Schreer. Kat is a former ballerina turned CrossFit enthusiast since 2013. Kat is now a level 3 trainer and affiliate owner. Kat owns and operates her garage gym, Catalyst Fitness, which she established in 2018 after she retired from corporate life at the age of 45. She is also a nutrition coach for Move the Needle. Kat's coaching philosophy is people-focused by constantly making human connections. She loves seeing athletes surpass their goals, have fun, and feel like they are well cared for along the way. Kat has been a volunteer judge at the Mid-Atlantic CrossFit Championship, the Rogue Invitational, Granite Games, Mayhem Classic, and the Reebok CrossFit Games. Kat is a self-proclaimed lifetime learner, dog lover, and ice cream lover. She competes in local CrossFit competitions, loves a heavy barbell, and despises running. Home to her is Hockessin, Delaware. I hope I'm saying that right. Where she lives with her husband Chris, teenagers Brayden and Eliana, and her three dogs Dash, Bumper, and Jojo. As always, I hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. And now, with all that being said, let's get on with the show. All right, so Kat, can we start out? Can you tell me a little bit about yourself growing up, where you grew up, sports you played, stuff like that?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up with an older brother and was a little bit of a tomboy. All the friends in the neighborhood that we played with were boys, pretty much. So my exposure to things like kickball and wiffle ball and kick the can and capture the flag all happened sort of in the neighborhood. When I was six, my mom put me in ballet and figure skating. And I remember Tuesdays and Thursdays was ballet, Wednesdays was figure skating. And she was getting tired of driving me all over the place for both of those things. And she asked me to pick one. So I ended up picking ballet. And I ended up doing classical ballet pretty much the rest of my youth and into college. It was, you know, my primary mode of exercise and things like that. I did go to a Catholic school, a girls' Catholic school that was very sports oriented. All my friends did sports. So socially, it was a little bit of a struggle. I can remember in the summer, just like dancing all summer long and not seeing my school friends at all. And then having to sort of, you know, reorient myself come fall when everyone had spent the summer together, you know, and I'm coming in again, like, hey, remember me? Like we were friends last year. Can we be friends again this year? So I dabbled in sports just to sort of fit in. You know, I played basketball in sixth grade. I did field hockey in eighth grade, track. I was on the diving team my sophomore year, but you know, my career in ballet really was sort of took up so much of my time that there really wasn't any time for anything else.
Now, do ballet and figure skating complement each other at all? Does one help you for the other in any way?
They do. It's funny that I didn't just stick with both of them because in hindsight, I probably would have rather figure skated because there's a little more to it in terms of what you can do afterwards. You can go to the Olympics and that sort of thing. And with ballet, it was very different when I was growing up. It was either, you know, if you danced for a professional company, you were not going to college, you know, not continuing your education and things like that. So it wasn't a really great choice for me to have growing up. Yeah, I can remember when I was probably 25 thinking to myself, I would like to try figure skating again and see if I'm any good. Because I think that would be fun.
Now,
but I never did.
When do you like for Olympic figure skaters and stuff? Do you like, is it one that you, is it like gymnastics where you only have a certain window to compete? Or can you compete
probably
later? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, probably. But, you know, I also had it in my head that I was going to be the first like 30 plus Olympian if I tried it.
Yeah.
And I'd probably make the Olympics.
I mean,
why not?
We all think that, right? We all think we're going to be the first. So you grew up in Delaware. Now in Delaware, I'm not even really sure where on the map that is, but what kind of like, what sports teams do you like when you live in Delaware?
So usually either Philadelphia or Baltimore.
Okay.
So lots of Ravens, Orioles fans, and then Phillies and Eagles. We are located about 45 minutes south of Philadelphia, 2 hours south of New York, 2 hours north of DC, about an hour and 10 minutes north of Baltimore. So it's just kind of like the armpit of.
Yeah. So that's actually kind of cool because you can go to New York, you can go to DC, Philly.
We did a lot of those kinds of day trips, weekend trips growing up for sure.
Is it on the coast?
Yes, there is a beach. Hmm. So it is on the coast, but it's mostly like Delaware River as it comes up through. And then there's portions of that are on the ocean. And you can actually take a ferry to southern Delaware beaches and get to South Jersey beaches.
Oh, that's cool.
So there's like a drive-on ferry from Lewis, Delaware to Cape May, New Jersey.
Like Jersey Shore?
Yep, South Jersey.
So then like when the hurricane came, did you get affected by that in Delaware?
A little bit. We have a lot of, you know, tributaries and rivers and things like that that are connected to coastal things, but we're so far inland that it's mostly just localized flooding. But I know the places down like at the beach about an hour away from us, were more affected by that stuff.
Kind of fast forwarding. Where did you go to school? What did you study? What did you do in school? In college, I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, so I went to the University of Delaware. Surprise, surprise. Fun fact there. I actually skipped my senior year of high school.
Really?
So, yeah. I went, the school that I went to, I was just getting really bored in school. I did really well. I was like top of my class and I felt like I wasn't really learning anything. And back then I wanted to be a doctor and I knew I had a lot of school ahead of me. And so there are a few colleges back then that offered juniors, you know, the opportunity to go to college after their junior year. So I applied to University of Delaware, Lafayette, and Johns Hopkins University. And all three of those, you had to go for an interview to sort of make sure that you were like mature enough to handle college life and things like that.
Okay.
And I got accepted to all three and really wanted to go to Hopkins. And my parents were getting a divorce during that time. And my dad wrote something in the divorce settlement to the effect that he would pay for Delaware and nothing else.
Did he go to Delaware or what? Why?
He did go to Delaware, I think, because it was in-state and it was cheap.
Okay.
You know, it was sort of like the cheaper option. And I really didn't want the burden to go onto my mom for that. So I went to Delaware. It was kind of by default.
What's the Delaware mascot?
It's a blue hen.
Okay.
Or a fighting, you know. Yeah, it's a blue hen.
Okay.
His name is, well, University of Delaware is UD, is the abbreviation, UD.
Okay.
And his name is Udee, Y-O-U-D-E-E, Udee.
Huh. That's kind of cool.
Kind of weird, yeah.
What conference do they play in?
They're in the Colonial Conference.
Do they play all sports? Like, do they play football there?
Yep, they have a football team. I can tell you that I think the first football game I actually went into the stadium and watched was probably after I graduated.
Oh, wow. So not
we
big,
did a lot of tailgating, but not a lot of watching of the football games.
Yeah.
I did a lot of we watched a lot of basketball games when I was in school because a lot of my friends or the guys that I hung out with were friends with the basketball team. So I was way more into watching basketball games than football games.
So you decide to go to Delaware. What did you study and what did you do there?
So I was supposed to, I got accepted into the biomedical technology field, and that was like a pre-med type thing. And I remember by the time summer was over, I changed my mind and didn't want to go to medical school, wanted to go to maybe law school. So I had to actually reapply to college because the College of whatever medical sciences was a different college than the College of Arts and Science, where I wanted to get my communications degree. And so I had to reapply and I got into the communications program, which was an interest program. You had to pass like 4 classes before you would get into the program. And I did not qualify for the program. So after my freshman year, and this is, you know, I'm like a 4.0 student and I just had way too much fun in college. It was, my freshman year, I lived with a 21-year-old, 2 21-year-olds and a 22-year-old. Okay. And I was 17.
Yeah. Okay.
So studying was just not happening. So I had to declare a major after my freshman year, and there was a professor who happened to be one of my dance partners from ballet. And he was this old guy. He was like reeked of alcohol. He was probably super inappropriate with his students, but he gave me A's in all of my history classes. So I decided to be a history major because I figured I could take all of his classes. I could get my degree and just still have fun. So that's what I did. Regrettably.
So you went all through, you finished with history. That's what you finished with.
I finished with a history major and a minor in poli sci.
Wow.
Thinking maybe I'd go to law school, right? Because you can parlay that into law school, but I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to do any more school.
Yeah, so you just like bounced around. You went from
totally
medical,
bounced around. I got like a 1.9 one semester, I think. Wow. I got like 2 C's, an F, and a incomplete or something. It was disgraceful.
Now how are you able to stay there?
I guess I turned that around. I mean, I must have. I don't even really remember. I guess I just took an easier course load and just managed to get through. And Delaware is set up where you have to take like a winter session if you want to graduate in 4 years. And I did graduate in 4 years, but I ended up getting like a 2.8.
Okay.
You know, so like complete disappointment to, you know, everybody that was sort of hoping I was going to move on and do great things.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, wah, wah.
So you end up getting into banking, but you came out with a history major. So so what did you do right out of school, and how did you find your way into banking?
So I applied for 2 jobs that summer after I graduated in 94. One was at MBNA, which is the precursor to Bank of America that we know today. And the other one was called TCIM Services. It was some telemarketing company. I didn't know anything about it. This was back when you'd look in the newspaper.
Yeah.
For want ads.
Okay.
And sort of, you know, type a letter and mail it to a place.
Yeah, I'm a little too young for that.
And so I put that I was a professional ballerina on my resume.
Okay.
Because technically I did get paid a couple times to dance.
Okay.
So I was a professional ballerina.
Yeah.
And I went to the one job interview at Bank of America. I went through 8 different people. The very last interview was with this woman who was like the managing director of whatever. And she and I just did not click at all. And I knew as soon as I left, I'm like, there's no way I'm getting that job. And that job was to be a collections agent. So on the phone, collecting credit card bills from customers.
Yeah, isn't that pretty rough or not fun?
It's super rough and like, you know, bare minimum, like entry level shit job.
Uh-huh.
The other job was to be an account manager for this telemarketing company, where I would be managing their telemarketing accounts. So I wouldn't be on the phone. I'd be managing the programs for banks and insurance companies and things like that. So I went to the interview. They took me out to lunch, like to an Italian restaurant. It was like the most grown-up experience I had. And I ended up getting the job. The interviewer wanted, or the hiring manager wanted to meet a professional ballerina.
Okay.
So he brought me in for the interview because of that. And I guess it was between myself and somebody else who was already in the industry and required a higher salary. So I remember $28,000 a year, they hired me as this account manager. And I'd never done anything like that before.
And this was for who?
This was for a company called TCIM Services. They were like a telemarketing company.
Okay.
And their clients were banks.
Yeah.
So the accounts that I worked on were banks. They were credit card acquisition programs that the bank would hire us to, you know, go out and cold call and sell their credit card products.
Gotcha.
So I did that for a bunch of years and then eventually just managed to get on the other side of that. So when I started applying at banks, I was like, hey, you have a telemarketing department. I could probably manage your programs for you because I did it on the client side for so long.
And then how did you like working in, I guess, the corporate America world? How was that to you? Did you like it, not like it?
It seemed great. You know, I got to wear really nice clothes and, you know, my salary jumped up pretty quickly, you know, from the 28 to, you know, almost six figures within like 10 years. I wasn't complaining.
Do you like wearing really nice clothes? I don't.
I do. I don't. I don't miss it now. I mean, I can't tell you the last time I wore anything like with a waistband, but I liked it at the time. Yeah, I liked it. I had a cute little figure and a little ballerina body. I could wear whatever I wanted, and I liked to get dressed up. Yeah.
So didn't things kind of go bad around the 2000 in the banking industry or no?
It did, but not for the credit card industry, right? The credit cards were still, booming and everybody, needed cards. So I jumped from one bank to another. Typically, and in Delaware, there's credit card banks all over in Delaware because we have these really liberal tax laws. And so companies tend to incorporate here and banks tend to have their headquarters here. So Chase, Citibank, at the time, Travelers, Bank of America, they all have headquarters here in Delaware. So we called it like the triple crown. People would sort of go from one to the other. And I think like Barclays is here now. So I was one of the few that had only worked at two of them, not at three of them, when I landed at Chase, which like used to be Bank One and all that. And I had a super fun job at Chase. I actually got to manage the United Mileage Plus credit card account. So Continental and United were our clients, and we got to travel to Houston. We got to go to Chicago. I went to the rodeo. We did all these fun events with our cardholders, and our cardholders were pretty high-end folks. Mm-hmm. We would do events in lounges. I would, go to LA and get to run like a credit card acquisition event in the lounge at LAX, and I got to see like Sting and like people just traveling through the airport. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. So then when did you kind of reach your ending point and decide you wanted to get out of it? What built you up to that? How'd you get to that point?
Well, when I was doing that job for United, I had started CrossFit, and had been doing it for a couple of years and really enjoyed it. And I was coaching like part-time and never really thought about leaving my job because it was super fun. Mm-hmm. And then the banking world sort of changed. There were all these regulatory changes. And what they did was they basically took anybody that was working in an existing card member capacity and moved them over into a controls position. So I became like a risk and control officer for the bank.
Okay.
Which is like watching paint dry. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
It was literally like I worked in an operations organization where I had to make sure that they were doing what they said they were doing.
Okay.
And setting up campaigns and action plans, and we would screw something up and then I'd have to do like a root analysis to find out why. It was just not my cup of tea. Yeah. It was the exact opposite of marketing.
Okay.
No travel.
Yeah. So you liked the travel then?
I liked the travel a lot.
So now I have to stop you. Can you go back a little bit?
Sure.
After you got out of school, what were you doing for fitness, and then how did you kind of come to find CrossFit?
Yeah. So I was a total gym rat after college. In college, I gained a freshman 15. I didn't really work out that much. I would go through like maybe one semester where I'd be at the, the student gym regularly and then just not. And then when I graduated, I started working out at like a Gold's Gym. And I would just go in the morning and do, I do my cardio, I do my back and by, chest and tries, leg day, that kind of thing. And I have a super muscular physique anyway. Like I'm a total mesomorph times 100. So I can like lift a soup can and get a pump from like that. So, and I didn't mind it. I wasn't like one of those girls that shied away from like looking muscular.
Yeah.
So I did that for a few years. And I think I'm pretty sure like when I met my husband, I was in my late 20s and we used to go to the gym together. I remember we were in one of their ads. Like they had taken a picture of us on the treadmill together, and we were like, so we have like a newspaper clipping of that somewhere. So I was doing that, just the traditional gym stuff and, somewhat regularly until like I got pregnant.
So since starting CrossFit, this is like way off topic. Have you gone back to any sort of Globo gym?
You know, I haven't. I talk about it all the time. I did once. One of my friends at work when I worked at Chase was a body pump, like Les Mills instructor. And she worked at the YMCA that was like two blocks away from our office. And she used to teach a Friday class at lunch. And I did go take her class once.
It is brutal.
It's crazy.
It is so bad. Yeah, like, I don't
that
know how.
Sustained cardio for an hour of stuff is really difficult. I know. I think I'm such this big bad athlete. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm dying.
Yeah. No, sorry. I was talking about Globo gyms. Walking in there, like just seeing what people are doing in there and how they're doing it. It can be so bad.
I can't even imagine. Like, just what I see on social media is just terrible. I don't know that I'd be able to go and not like try to help people.
It's crazy. So cringy. I know, like you, I see the videos and I see like hear what people tell me, and I'm like, that is so bad. How does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then how did you eventually find CrossFit?
A neighbor of mine, I met her out for drinks. We hadn't seen her in a year or two. She had gotten divorced from her husband and moved out of the neighborhood. And we bumped into her. I say we, my girlfriend, Mary, and I. And we saw her out and she looked amazing. She was like muscular and like slender, but not skinny. And we asked her what she was doing. And she's like, oh, I started this thing. It's called CrossFit. And we're like, oh, okay. What's that? Like, we want to try it.
Yeah.
And so she took us to a 5 a.m. class, and from day one, I was completely hooked. Like, I think I went twice that week, twice the following week, and then just like paid for an unlimited membership. Yeah. I was like, I have to do this every day.
For a little bit of context, what year was this?
This was in August of 2013.
Okay. So kind of when CrossFit was getting into its kind of boom era.
Big time. Yeah.
So do you remember back, what was the first workout you did, or what was your first, like when you walked into the gym, what did you think?
I wish I do remember. I have a picture. I was one of those people that was putting up annoying motivational quotes every morning on Facebook, like 6 months prior to this, because my girlfriend Mary and I were waking up at like 4:30 in the morning and we were walking the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So we'd walk like 3.5 miles every morning, and it was just our way to connect with each other and, you know, complain about our husbands and our kids and vent. So every morning I would have this stupid little motivational quote that people really started to like depend on every day. Like, if I didn't put one on, you know, I'd get like, hey, where's my quote? So,
it's like, find your own
so
quotes.
I do remember the post on the day that I had my first CrossFit class. I remember I took a picture of like the top of the whiteboard where you could see the logo of the gym. And I said something like, trying something new today. And so that comes up on my memories every year, and it's kind of cool, but I wish I remembered the first workout. But I do remember this one time we were doing deadlifts and running. And as I was running like back into the gym after doing deadlifts, the coach was like, how you feeling? And I was like, I feel alive. I felt alive.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a reawakening for sure.
Because it's unlike anything you had ever done in the past. So what do you think it was about it that hooked you on it?
I think the fact that I was coordinated enough to do the movements, I felt very encouraged by that. Like the first day we did, you know, like let's say cleans or, you know, thrusters and things like that. And my like muscle memory from ballet just came rushing back to me. And it felt so good to just not feel like an idiot. And I was kind of good at it. Like you could tell people that had been there a while were watching me like, oh my God, this is like her second day. And she's like crushing it. So I think that just gave me sort of the boost I needed to feel, you know, really good.
Yeah, that is amazing. You can always tell who's done it before just by walking into the gym and watching everyone work out, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I see videos of me doing cleans and snatches like early on, and I'm like, oh my God.
Those are the best. I love those videos.
Terrible. They're fun to watch.
It's so funny to like look back and see how you used to look and how you look now and just the progress. Yeah. So then when did you really start to get into it? You mentioned in the first couple of weeks, you went a couple times. And then when did you really start to get into it and really be like, I really like this. This is a passion of mine.
Pretty soon after that. It was really easy. I was a 5 a.m. regular right from the start. And I would say for probably 4 years, I was Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. like clockwork.
It's the best time to go.
Yeah. And for me, it was like nobody needed me. You know, my kids were asleep. Nobody was up yet. I didn't have to, you know, I had no responsibilities. And so it was really the only time that worked for me. There were other gyms that were closer that didn't have a 5 a.m. that I just, you know, would drive by in the morning because I needed that early time slot.
Yeah, it's amazing because like it's so easy. It's hard to get up, but like if say you try to go at 5 p.m. every day, it's like, well, yeah, but people like you never know what's gonna happen during the day is what I'm trying to say. Like during the morning, no one's gonna be asking you to do something at 5 a.m. They're gonna be asking you to do
Yeah.
something at 5 p.m.
Too many excuses during the day
Yeah,
to, you
and
know,
then
build upon.
unexpected things come up and all that stuff, so.
And I'm still terrible at like figuring out what to eat
Yeah.
before a workout if I'm not doing it as soon as
Yeah.
I roll out of bed. Like I get so flustered if someone wants to work out with me at like 9 a.m. or 1 p.m. because now my schedule's pretty flexible and I'm always like, what do I eat? When should I eat? You know, I don't know because I'm so used to doing it fasted.
So you don't eat before 5 a.m. ever?
No,
Did you ever
mm-mm.
used to?
Nope.
Never.
Never. Never. I mean, a pre-workout drink, that's it.
Yeah. And you always felt fine doing that?
I felt great. I mean,
Yeah.
and even when like I would do local competitions and they'd start early in the morning, I'd feel awesome. You know, I would always have a hard time like fueling before a competition because I was so used to, you know, working out on an empty stomach.
So now you're a coach. How did you kind of get interested in that? How did that all come up? And then where did you start? And how'd you get into that?
I went for my level one in December of 2013. So it was pretty fast. Like I
Yeah,
was a
wow.
year and a couple of months into it. And I didn't do it because I wanted to coach. I did it just because I was such a student of the sport and student of the methodology that I wanted to learn more about it. So I really considered getting my L1 as just a way to better understand me as an athlete. I wanted to compete. I wanted to, you know, do all these things. So that was going into it. That was the reason. And then I realized quickly thereafter that I learned so much and I brought it back to my gym and my gym didn't have the most mature group of coaches at the time, you know, or tenured group of coaches at the time that I felt like I wanted to contribute to that. And you know, I thought I could do it better than them. You know, I
Yeah.
was like, wait, you know, I just took this class. Like, I get it. I want to do this too. So it was really more like I wanted to be part of that group that was helping the rest of the community get better. Because by then, I'm a year in and I'm in love with all these people around me too. You know, there's 100, 200 members in that gym that like were all my best friends.
Yeah, I think that if you can, and even if you have no interest in coaching, if you love CrossFit, you should go take the level one. It is so great.
Absolutely.
It's, I
Absolutely. And
just love.
I remember being mad during it, because I was like, no one ever told me that, or no one, you
Yeah.
know, no one ever taught me this. And, you know, to his credit, my coach was an amazing coach and still is an amazing coach, but it was just him, really. He didn't have a whole lot of support. And I could see, you know, 20 people in our class, like it's hard to get all that knowledge across to all your athletes, especially if you don't have to. You know, if they're making progress and doing things, you don't have to get into the nitty-gritty of it. But I was pissed. I was like, you know, there's a lot of shit that I didn't know about that I wish I had. But I remember him telling me when I went to my level one, he said, and it was the best advice, he said, forget everything you think you know about CrossFit and just go in with an open mind.
That's good advice. That's what
Really
your
good
coach at the
advice.
time told you.
Yep.
So then after
Yeah,
your
so
level one, you said you weren't like gonna coach, but then you got inspired to coach from that.
I did, yeah, within like a month.
Yeah.
I did like an internship at my gym,
Okay.
shadowed the main coach for a few times and then picked up some classes. You know, in my spare time it was like some nighttime classes. I think too in January, right on the heels of getting my level one, I got my weightlifting certification as
Okay.
well. So I think it started out with I actually started teaching like a weightlifting class at the gym, if I remember correctly. So that
And
was sort of my foray into it.
was your main coach at the time just a level one, or was he a two or three?
Yeah, he was just a level one. I actually got my level two before he did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I recently took mine like a month or two ago, and I think like the level one's great for learning about CrossFit and learning about the methodology. But if you want to be a good coach, like you have to take the two. I learned so much
Absolutely.
stuff. It's unbelievable.
I want to take it again. Yeah. You know, I mean, I can't wait to take it again.
I had people there who had been there. This one guy was on his fourth time. I was like, that's crazy.
what are you doing here? Think you pick up things every time. Yeah, but I did. For sure. I remember doing my level two, I think less than a year after my level one.
Really?
And I was, I did it in like November, I think of it would have been 15. And being one of the few people, they go around the room, you know, how long have you been coaching? And everyone's like, oh, I've been coaching for 5 years. I've been coaching for 6 years. And I was like, I've been coaching for 9 months. And I felt really, you know, insignificant being there. I was like, should I be here? But yeah, it's a great experience. Yeah.
So then when did you finally decide to drop the banking and pursue the CrossFit?
Well, I was really trying hard to, I wanted to be a gym owner is what I really wanted to do.
Like as soon as you got hooked on CrossFit, it seems like all this happened really fast.
Yeah, I think after I got my level one and I started coaching, I think I had such strong ideas and feelings about how things should be done that I wanted to be part of the leadership team of the gym I was working at. And so because I loved that community and I loved those people. So I tried really hard to get into a position where I could have more influence into some of those decisions and, you know, be a bigger part of that group. And it, unfortunately, there's like four owners of that gym and one head coach.
That's a lot.
And the owners weren't the coaches. They were just sort of owners. So if anybody was going to get like equity in that company, it was going to be that general manager, head coach person.
That's a lot of voices.
It wasn't going to be me.
Yeah. That's a lot of people making the same decisions.
Yeah. And so I saw the only way for me to get what I wanted was I was going to have to go out on my own and do it because there wasn't any room for me to do it there, even though that would have been my dream to do it there. Again, because it's really hard to walk away from a community of people that you're so close to. But I did end up walking away from that and doing some training on my own, like side hustle.
Okay.
Right. So I would get some personal training clients from family friends or, you know, soccer moms that I knew in the neighborhood. And once I realized that I needed my hours during the day to be free, if I wanted to make this work, I decided to just leave the job. I mean, it was a little bit of a longer stretch than just that. I'm oversimplifying.
Yeah.
But, and the irony now is that I'm rarely busy between the hours of like 9 and 3. I have nothing going on. Yeah. It's all early morning and it's all, you know, afternoon.
Yeah. Like the classic CrossFit schedule.
Yeah. Which is not what I had envisioned at all. I thought I was going to have, you know, I wanted my mornings free. I wanted my afternoons free to be with my kids, my evenings free to spend with my family. And I wanted, you know, from 9 to 5 to be coaching those hours. And it totally didn't work out that way.
Now, your decision to leave the banking world and just kind of the comfortable life of having a, you know, a job and a salary you can rely on. What did your family say? What did the people around you say? Did anybody call you crazy? How did that all go down?
I called myself crazy a few times because you just look at that paycheck and my husband and I both worked in corporate America. So we were making about the same amount of money as one another. So we were automatically like, okay, our income's going to go in half. It wasn't like, you know, I was a school teacher and he was this executive and, you know, my salary contributed, you know, a fraction of the household. It was half.
Yeah.
More than half, really. So it was a big leap. I mean, I had to show him, you know, and he's an accountant of all things. So it's like, crap. He's like, how is this going to add up? I'm like, just trust me. It'll be fine. It was definitely a leap of faith for him. And I give him a lot of credit for sort of believing in me and letting me do my thing. Because even today, you know, we're trying to do some things with the business and I'm trying to make some leaps with the business. And he's kind of like, well, what's your plan? Like what does that look like? And I'm like, you don't understand the business. Like I don't necessarily have a plan, the kind of plan that you're looking for me to give you. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And so I've had to educate him a little bit on, you know, how this business works. And I think slowly but surely he's starting to really trust that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. That probably doesn't make the accounting mind too happy when you say something like that.
Not at all. I mean, he has a pro forma for me that basically when and if I get to open up a big box, we know exactly how many members we need to have at this rate to break even. And, you know, it's a huge math problem that we're trying to work through. But yeah, it was difficult, and it was definitely a leap of faith. And last summer we just had our, we just had like our annual meeting with our financial planners. We, as soon as I left the bank, we hired financial planners because we wanted to make sure that we weren't going down this path and not going to be able to put our kids through college and, you know, not have money for retirement and things like that. And last year, that would have been our second year with the financial planners, because I started in 2018. We were at a crossroads. They were like, you either need to make more money or you need to stop spending money because you guys are like in a negative cash flow, you know, position right now, and this cannot go on. And I was ready to go back to Chase. Like, I was ready to try to get another corporate job and be like, oh, well, it didn't work. And that sucked. Yeah. And he was even like, you know, my husband's like, well, maybe I can get a second job. And I'm like, I'm not going to make you get a second job just because I couldn't make this work. Like, let me try to figure it out. And then like COVID hit mm-hmm. and it's like, you know, crap, now what do we do? We had our meeting last week, and we somehow ended up carving out like almost $30,000 worth of expenses are now gone. I don't know how we did that. and my income is like doubled from my business. So I figured out like the formula of what works. Mm-hmm. And I'm also not working, you know, 15-hour days or anything. Like, I'm not at the point where I'm burnt out. But it's just me, and it's just my garage, and it's just my clients.
So you're not coaching at a gym anymore, at someone else's gym? Nope. Just
no, and I was doing that up until about a year ago. Like, I was working at two different CrossFit gyms to just kind of make ends meet because I could work there a lot and get the hours. And I'm a nutrition coach, so I make money doing nutrition stuff, but it's for another company. It's not for myself. Yeah. So we're in a really good spot right now, thankfully.
Just, and this all happened in the last 6 months or whatever.
It was. I would say in the last 6 months.
It's funny. I was listening. Sorry. Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, it's funny. I was listening to your conversation, your first conversation with Scott, and I looked at the date and I was like, oh, February 3rd. I was like, oh, these guys have no idea what's about to happen.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. it was a rude awakening, but so luckily, you know, my business is considered a home-based business.
Yeah.
So there were no regulations that I had to follow in terms of like shutting down.
Yeah.
A lot of people would come to my gym and work out as like an open gym because their gym was closed. So I offered that as one of the things.
So that had to really help. The whole situation had to help you.
The whole situation absolutely helped me. I mean, I lost a couple clients, maybe three.
Yeah.
And one of them is back and the other two I haven't heard from, and they're immunocompromised or have immunocompromised family members. So I completely understand why they're not back. But I've really honed in on like two avatars for my business. And one is the student who now doesn't have gym class.
Yeah.
Right. We call it gym class 2020, like come to the garage and get a workout in. And the other avatar is the person who wants private training as opposed to personal training. So I'm really trying to differentiate those two concepts, because people say like, oh, you're a personal trainer. And I correct them and I say, I'm actually a private trainer.
Okay. And so explain that a little bit.
So personal training, when I think of personal training, I think of somebody in a Globo gym or a big box gym, you know, walking you through stations and doing different things with 100 other people around. Right. And private training is when you are in a place with nobody else around getting trained. And there are plenty of people who need fitness who do not want to be on display at a gym, and who would not be, you know, who would not step foot in a big box gym where there's, you know, these really fit moms on treadmills here and these really, you know, muscly grunting guys here with my trainer, you know, doing battle ropes and like barely being able to like catch my breath. And so what I offer is, you know, I use the CrossFit methodology for most of my clients because it works. But they get it personalized for them and in a place where they don't have to deal with anybody else.
Gotcha.
It's a real unique concept and people don't think about it. And I mean, I use it in my marketing all the time, like the difference between private training and personal training.
So, and yeah,
it's working.
Yeah. So would you say that personal training aspect applies in a CrossFit box too, in terms of training someone off to the side during a class?
I mean, yeah, it depends on the setup of the box. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I ever open up, you know, a traditional CrossFit gym where I can do group classes, I would hope to still have a place where I could do private training. And I don't mean under the rig while class is going on. I mean, actually in a separate location where you don't have people watching you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think that's a huge fear for people.
So your business has taken off. Your husband's an accountant. You have financial planners. Mm-hmm. So it has to be a timeline here. When are you expecting to open a gym?
So we went over that too. I'm affiliated right now. So
you are.
I have,
okay. I was going to ask you about but I didn't want to get you in any trouble.
No, you're fine. Catalyst Fitness is the name of my private training business.
I see
and
that.
I have an affiliate. I have an affiliate called CrossFit Clarity. And I affiliated May 1st of last year.
2019 or 2020?
2020, during the pandemic.
Okay. Wow.
I had been planning it. I've had the name for 2 years. I've had the logo forever. Like, I've been planning to do it. It's just the time hasn't been right. And I hadn't found a spot.
Gotcha.
I found a spot 3 days before the world shut down and was about to sign a letter of intent for a lease and didn't, right?
Why?
I thought,
yeah, how'd you
not? Yeah. So that place fell through and
for the better.
Yes, for the better. And then my business here started getting better. And it's looking like for right now, the way the climate is in terms of the unknown with the coronavirus and things like that, I don't have immediate plans to open up a box. Because it just doesn't make financial sense.
Just kind of let this ride out and until there's some more certainty and normalcy.
That, and I need to get to a point where I am burning at both ends. Like, I need to get to the point where I'm maxed out personally, and I'm just not there yet.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make any sense to take every bit of income that I'm making now and sink that into rent. Mm-hmm. And then hope that I get, you know, 50 people who want to do CrossFit that aren't, you know, woven the same way as my avatar clients are now. Like, they're completely different, a completely different audience.
What is kind of crazy is a lot of CrossFit gyms, yes, are hurting and a lot of them had to shut down, but there are some out there who have gained more members from this because you get people who are bored or whose gyms are still shut down. They want to try something
new
and you get this like flood of new clients, which is crazy because I mean, the ones in the cities are definitely hurting. Like, I used to live in Chicago and a lot of the gyms there are shut down, but yeah, it's weird. It just kind of depends on where you are and your demographic and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's been devastating to a lot. And, you know, and I was sort of benefiting from that because I was picking up equipment and things because, you know, I thought I was 2 months away from opening up a gym. I'm buying rig parts and, you know, extra bumper plates and things like that. And I've kind of put the halt on that as well because I'm like, I don't think I need it right now.
Yeah, that was crazy too. The whole, like, even now you can't get any equipment.
It's crazy. I still want to buy. There's this guy selling a floor scrubber for like $2,000.
Oh, really?
And those things are so expensive.
Yeah.
And I keep telling my husband, I'm like, can we please just buy the floor scrubber? He's like, no. Like, it's so cheap. Can I please get it?
Yeah. Talk about a thriving industry. It would be like Rogue just made a killing off of this whole
thing. It's unreal. It's unreal. And that's the other piece. If I did have a spot to open, I wouldn't be able to outfit it. I just wouldn't. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have the equipment. So we're just staying in the garage for now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, though. I think it's cool to always hear the stories of old CrossFit gyms, like from just opened in like 2009, 2008, who did start in a garage. It's always cool to hear about that. Just a group of people getting together to work out and just.
Yeah, and I have some local folks that are just like literally waiting for me to open. Like, they keep, you know, they go to other CrossFit gyms and they keep texting me like, hey, when you open, my place is getting a little crazy. When are you going to open? And I said, you know, I wish I could, but I can't do it for five people, you know?
Yeah.
I'm toying around with the idea of doing a 5 a.m. class, like in the garage, because most of the people that want to come to me when and if I do open are those 5 a.m. folks. But part of me honestly is like, if you do this, you have to wake up every morning at 4:30 now and have this class.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, you know, go on vacation or like take a mental health day or do any of that. Like, it's 100% on me. And I'm not ready to do that. Mm-hmm. It sounds selfish, but yeah, I'm not ready.
Understandably so.
Not ready to do it.
And now you also do some judging and stuff like that. How'd you get into that and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's a crazy story. I'm not even sure how I got chosen, but my first official judging sanctioned event was the Mid-Atlantic CrossFit Challenge back in 2019. And that occurred in like March of 2019. No idea how I got picked. I don't even remember registering for it, to be honest with you. Like, I don't remember the process.
Yeah, okay.
I just remember thinking like, oh, I could probably judge that. You know, I think it was me getting my level 3 sort of gave me a little bit of confidence,
yeah, for sure.
And thought like, well, they don't know who I am, but this level 3 is going to help me.
Yeah, says a lot.
Open some doors. Mm-hmm. So I got that gig. I went and did it, and I didn't screw up, and I had a lot of fun doing it. And the people that managed that, I guess, liked me or thought I was decent enough to continue. So I ended up signing up for Granite Games and got the opportunity to do that. But what was weird was Rogue was happening prior to Granite Games. So Rogue was in April of that year. And when I got back from MAC, I said to myself, wouldn't it be cool if I got to go to Rogue and judge? And I'm thinking, there's no way, but whatever, I'll put my name in the hat. So I went to register for Rogue and they were closed. The registration was closed. They were like, you know, sorry, we have all of our volunteers already lined up, you know, maybe next year. And I literally just replied back to whoever it was. And I said, hey, if you have any cancellations, just let me know. And that was it. A week before Rogue, I got an email from the volunteer coordinator that said, we have an opening. Would you like to judge? And I was like, yeah. Like, I dropped everything. I canceled appointments. I, you know, got my airline tickets. I was like, hell yeah, I want to do that. And so I went and was a judge at Rogue. And talk about imposter syndrome. When I got there, there were only, I don't know, maybe 30 judges, maybe 40 judges, a small room of people, not like a huge group. Every single one of them, I'm pretty sure, was like a former games judge. Like, oh, wow. they all knew each other. They all were like hugs and kisses, you know, when they got there and like, hey, how's this? And, you know, bragging about, oh, remember last year, Katrin did this. And, you know, like completely, I was completely out of, and I was like, what am I doing here? Like, how did I get here?
Yeah.
So it was like one of those just fake it till you make it kind of situations that that turned out. And then since then, I've just gotten really lucky and gotten selected to do things. I got to judge the games last year.
Oh, you did?
I think it was only because I did Rogue. You know, I think having Rogue on my resume helped me get to the games. But there have been people that I know that have been judging for years that are better judges than me that have never been to the games, never get picked for the games. So I don't really know how that process works.
So you judge at the games?
I judged at the games and I judged teams, elite teams at the games. I didn't get put in the shed with the masters, you know, and not that that's, a demotion or anything, but like for your first year to do elite teams, that's kind of insane.
Yeah, that's really, really cool.
And again, I don't know anybody. I didn't like do anything special. I think I just got really lucky.
Have you had any athlete yell at you or get mad at you for any of your no reps or calls?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Granite Games, Joey Toto had a team with Nicole, I don't know her last name. It's Sam Briggs' partner.
Okay.
Nicole and then two other people. They had a 4-person team and I totally screwed up. Like, it was completely my fault. They had to like move a sandbag. They were doing sandbag cleans. And I think the last sandbag clean, they were supposed to like move it ahead, advance it ahead before they went back for rope climbs. That was my thinking, but they didn't actually have to move it ahead. They could just leave it where it was. And as the athlete's running down to the rope climbs, I'm like calling them back to move the sandbag. And she sort of stops and looks at me. And Joey Toto is like at the end of the row. And he's like screaming at me like, no. And like in the middle of it, I'm just kind of like, okay, just go. And it was kind of like no harm, no foul. I don't think it like, God forbid, like I don't think it cost them a placing in the event or anything like that. But it was the second heat of that event. And the first heat that I judged, the team that I judged didn't get far enough in the workout for that to have occurred. So it just didn't, I didn't get to practice it, you know, like it was my first time getting to that point in the workout, and it just made a mistake. And he was super apologetic afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I'm so sorry. I was like, dude, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Like,
heat of the moment.
Like, I completely understand. Yeah. But it's interesting that, you know, you do, you lose, they lose their temper, but they're so gracious afterwards. And they, you know, really don't mean to do that. Even I was at Masters Fitness Collective, just this past September judging. And, I had an incident where somebody was arguing a call, and I was the head judge. So I was going in after the fact and sort of calming this woman down, because she thought that she had completed a heavy clean and jerk, and her judge, who was a games judge, gave her no rep because it was a bad rep. She didn't lock it out at all. And she was adamant. She was so pissed off. And she's like, you know, I could have made it faster, and, you know, I could have done this and I could do that. And I said, I'm really sorry. I said, I saw it. It wasn't good, like, whatever. So about 2 hours later, I see her, and she comes up to me, and she's like, hey, I got to tell you, I looked at the video. She's like, you are 100% right. I did not come anywhere close to locking that out. and so it's just, it's like, it's fine. I understand.
Yeah, that's super cool. It is funny, though, because it's like anything, like, people make mistakes. Judges are going to make mistakes. I mean, it's like baseball. It's like anything, you know, umpires are going to make mistakes.
So here's something I've never told in public, but I'll do it now because I think it's far enough past the event. But Granite Games, Elite women, I don't know, event four, we'll call it. I was judging the first heat, and I had some person in my lane, and we had just, at Granite Games, you judge like 18 million heats in a row. And it goes anywhere from like the beginner division to novice to RX to elite. And so we had been doing other teams of, or other heats. And I think the heat before had to do like 10 chest to bar pull-ups. And this next heat had to do 20 chest to bar pull-ups. And I'm judging the girl, and I'm not even looking at my score sheet. I'm just counting. And she goes to 10, and I pull her off the bar to get to the next element. She kind of looks at me funny, and she goes on to the next element. And she does that. And, you know, so she finishes the workout, and about 80% through the workout, I look down at my scorecard to like see where we are. And I'm like, oh shit. She was supposed to do 20 chest to bar pull-ups and she only did 10.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she won the event, right? Mm-hmm. She won the event.
Well, I'm sure.
Not just her.
I mean, maybe.
She won the whole event, right? And this is a ticket to the games, right? Like, this is an important competition. I mean, I was beside myself, and, you know, there wasn't anything we could do at that point. Like, there was no like adjusting of the scores, and no one at that point had ever told me as a judge, like, hey, if you have a major F up, this is what you're supposed to do. So I didn't even like really tell anybody because I was embarrassed. And I thought like they're going to kick me out, like, if they find out. I mean, I went back and looked at the results like over the course of the day. And this gal had been like 25th place. Event one, 26th place, event two, 23rd place, event three, first place, event. And I'm just like, oh dear God. Yeah. Oh no. it was my worst moment. Worst moment. I don't even remember who it was. Like, I'd love to wish I remembered the name and go back and be like, do you remember that time?
I mean, that's tough too when you're judging all day and it's different groups and it's different rep schemes. It's like, anyone out there for a whole day, I mean, you're bound to make a mistake at some point.
I mean, and that's the role of the head judge, and they did a great job, but, you know, every once in a while the head judge would come around and be like, okay, new heat, different heat, remember, like, rep scheme's changing. They had like color coded sheets, and there's only so much you can do, but I was brain dead. I just totally screwed that up.
That's all right, we all make mistakes.
I hope they invite me back.
Some bigger than others.
Right.
Okay, so switching gears a little bit, you now co-host a podcast with Scott. How did you get linked up with him, and how'd you get your way onto his show? Because I know in your podcast with him, you said, if you ever need a co-host or someone drops out, I'm in. So how did that all come to be?
Yeah, yeah. I've been having so much fun with that. So Scott and I met at the Mayhem Classic back in January. We had a mutual friend. So my friend Diana was a judge. She knew Scott, and she is like master connector. And she said, you know, you should talk to Scott. Scott has this podcast, and, you know, I think you're a very interesting person. And she loved my story about how I sort of, you know, quit corporate America and just became this coach.
Yeah.
And she said, I think Scott would be interested in that. So I met Scott. We didn't spend much time together. It was literally like a handshake and a hi.
And then he called me or reached out a little bit later to ask me to be on his podcast. And I went on his podcast. And then, like I said, I left that little teaser at the end. I said, hey, if you ever want anybody or need somebody, because I just thought it was cool. It was fun.
Yeah.
And so he invited me to sort of guest co-host some interviewing of his co-hosts. So I interviewed Scott, I interviewed Charlie, and I interviewed Amy.
Okay.
As sort of bonus episodes. And I don't know if he was like, that was my tryout or what, but those got published. And then soon thereafter, he asked me to become one of his friends on the podcast. And I said, sure. So, and I think it helped that I got him some, I got them some guests.
Yeah.
You know, like I scored like Con Porter, who was like one of our co-hosts, Amy's like dream boy. And I've, you know, I've gotten them some other guests just through different connections that I have, or just, you know, the way I finesse a DM and Instagram sometimes makes people feel comfortable and willing to come on the podcast. So I was able to do that. And then just recently, Scott and I started a second podcast called Beyond the Journal.
Yeah.
And this one's just the two of us, where we really get to deep dive into some very cool stories about folks that have been featured on the journal prior.
Yeah.
And we get to dig a little deeper. So that's been a lot of fun too. Very rewarding.
Yeah. I remember him telling me about that. That sounds like a really, really cool idea.
Yeah. We're like two episodes in on that one, but we've got like maybe one or two in the can now too.
Now for you, I know you want to open the gym and that's on the radar, but what are some other goals, dreams, desires for the future?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm not very good at goals. Like and I've said this before on when other people have talked to me, I like the process. I'm very much into like what happens getting there instead of the destination. So, and it's been working for me so far. So I'm going to continue on with this podcast, these podcasts, and see what becomes of that. I'd like to start my own podcast with some of my clients, to do some of like before and after journeys with them, because I think I have a lot of interesting people that come and see me, especially in that private training realm, that are cool stories. I absolutely still someday, you know, would love to have my own traditional CrossFit gym if that's what's meant to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think that will happen. I definitely have all the pieces in place to figure that out. But I'm really excited about this podcast stuff, to be honest with you. Like that to me seems super fun. And I love just it allows me to connect with people, more people than I could just in my garage. And I'm really enjoying it. And it's cool.
It's fun.
Super fun.
I like what you said earlier, how you're not a big goals person, because I feel like sometimes goals can be overrated. And I like how you kind of like, yeah, you like to work hard and do the things you love. And I feel like that in itself sometimes opens doors for you. And sometimes people will look at you and like, if you can't tell them exactly what all your goals are, your 1 year, 5 year, 10 year goals, they kind of look at you funny. But like things change, people evolve, goals evolve. So I think it is good that you kind of keep it open, keep an open mind, and kind of let things just flow.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having goals just seems very finite to me, you know, and then it's like, well, what's next? Well, what's next? And what if you don't make it? Are you a failure because you didn't make your goal? Well, what if you, you know, took like a 90 degree turn and did something else that was even more awesome?
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, I don't like that sort of putting it out there. Like, this is what I need to be doing. Because
And then if you fail, you think you're a failure. I don't like that either. I like more, I think you need more of just direction. Like, I love these things. I'm going to do these things, pursue them. I don't necessarily need to say I need to do X by X time necessarily all the time. But as long as you have the direction, I feel like it can really help you out.
Yeah, I'd be much happier just reporting what's happened, right? Because like the way we left it with Scott in February, you know, I figured by now I would have had, you know, my CrossFit gym, but I don't. And what I have is probably better.
Yeah.
And I would have never said to you like, oh, you're going to have 30 personal training clients and you're going to have this new sort of niche of private training. Would have never expected that.
All right. So real quick, I have a couple put you on the spot rapid fire questions. Not really. They might not be rapid fire, but I'm just going to throw them at you. So what is one thing about yourself that most people don't know about you?
I am such a transparent person. This is a very hard question. I'm like an oversharer. I cannot stand farting.
Just at
all? I think it's so gross. So gross.
But you know, it's like a thing that all people do, right?
I know. It's really gross. My dogs do it. My husband does it. It disgusts me.
Okay. That's pretty funny, actually. So are you disgusted in yourself when it happens to yourself?
I don't fart. That's my final answer.
Okay. So then Okay, so I actually have one more thing to ask you. So,
okay.
Before you go, what kind of, I guess, words of wisdom or pieces of advice you can offer to the listeners? I would say specifically someone who kind of is in a similar situation as you, is looking to kind of take a dive and kind of take a risk and just go for something. It doesn't necessarily have to be what you did, but
yeah,
kind of someone in that situation.
I think you need to give yourself more credit than you're currently giving yourself. I know for me, I have this, it's like the imposter syndrome thing where I think I'm not good enough. And you are probably way better at what you do than you actually think you are. And so don't be afraid to sort of monopolize on those strengths and really take the risk. I mean, calculated risks, right? And like, don't be stupid, but take that calculated risk. I still today think like, some days like, God, I'm the worst trainer ever. And why would anyone ever take advice from me? And you just have to sort of put that aside and not worry about, you know, that one hater out there and just try to focus on the people that really build you up and know that you're awesome at what you do. I think surrounding yourself with those people is helpful and trying to not compare yourself on like social platforms to other people, because that is, it really is the thief of joy, that comparing yourself to others.
Yeah. I love what you just said. I think a lot of the times, like, we usually have more bad things or kind of bad days than good. But for me, at least personally, all it ever takes is one little thing to turn it all around. One person to reach out and say something, you know, one good workout, it always just takes one thing to totally just flip that, for me at least.
So, yeah.
And, like what you said there.
And because of that, I try to do that with people I care about too. So if I see somebody that maybe I haven't talked to in a while, but who's doing a great job doing their thing, I try to just send them a note and be like, hey, I was thinking about you today. You're doing awesome. Mm-hmm. Because I need to hear that. And I want to sort of put it out there to others too. So yeah, I try to do that.
Cause I can't tell you how many times like I've done that, you know, cause I know how good it feels for me. So when I do it to somebody else and they'll be like, hey, like I needed this. I really needed this. This really like helped me today. That makes you feel amazing when that happens.
It does.
Like helping someone else.
And same with the person that's giving it. It just makes you feel good.
For sure.
We got to build each other up.
Yeah. All right. So Kat, where can people find you, learn more about you? Where can people find your podcasts, all that good stuff?
Oh my gosh. This is going to be a long list. So, all right. So on Instagram, my personal Instagram is CrossFit Coach Kat. Catalyst Fitness DE is my Catalyst Fitness, and CrossFit Clarity is my Instagram for the gym. CrossFit Clarity has daily programming on there, pretty much is it for this point, since I don't really have a box. And the Catalyst Fitness stuff is all my private training stuff. The podcast, so Clydesdale Fitness and Friends is the name of the first podcast, and you can find that on any podcast platform or on iHeartRadio, Apple, iTunes, Spotify, you name it. The second podcast is called Beyond the Journal with the Clydesdale and Kat. That is also available on all those platforms. We also have a YouTube channel that is Clydesdale Fitness and Friends, and you will see all of our podcasts on video as well. So you can see our gorgeous faces. And we do a podcast every Monday where we do sort of like an interview. And then every Wednesday we do a roundtable where we just sort of shoot the shit and talk about fun CrossFit stuff.
Cool. So like kind of like CrossFit news and what's going on.
Yeah. And then we do like a question of the week and favorite thing on the internet and bust each other's balls. It's fun.
And then, yeah, speaking of that, one last thing, what do you think about the direction in the future of CrossFit as a sport, as a just everything?
It's looking awesome. I'm super excited for it. I think we've got the right person at the helm. I think he's cleaning house a little bit. With some of the old regime coming out. And I'm hopeful for the future. I think I'm hoping that platforms like ours can also sort of work in tandem with HQ to sort of bring some of these stories to light, because they don't have you know, a really robust media team or PR team. I think, you know, we could be a really good extension of that for them. The sport, super exciting, right? Yeah. Like the fact that we're going to be like on CBS for the finals and everything. I want to get back to normal, the non-corona version of the games.
Yeah,
will be exciting, but really looking forward to the Open this year to see how they sort of change that. And I bet you we have a rule book way before the season starts.
Yeah. Two things I think are coming back in a big way. Media. I think that's all going to come back bigger than it was before. I mean, you have to. It's 2020.
Right.
It's about to be 2021. And regionals. I think regionals are coming back.
You do?
I do.
Oh, well, I don't know. I hope you're right, but
I think there'll be some sort of format where it's both. So you keep some of the big sanctionals around, and then you also have some version of regionals again. I don't think you can just go right from the Open to the games.
I wouldn't be surprised if they turn the regionals into some kind of an affiliate cup championship circuit.
What exactly do you mean by that?
Like the affiliate cup where there were teams of six back in the day.
Oh, from each.
The affiliate cup is what you win at the CrossFit Games for teams. So I wouldn't be surprised if perhaps regionals comes back for that purpose. But I don't know about for individuals. Well, we'll see. It's going to be fun to just, I love being an observer of all the changes.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's all good change. It's a weird time because of the times, but it's going to take some time, but it'll be cool. Just got to weather the storm.
Yep, for now. Exactly. It's going to be fun.
All right, Kat. Well, thanks a lot for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. We'll see you next week for another episode of the Up Before You podcast. Thank you, everyone, and have a great day.